the door as well. Company culture and its importance as it's beginning to become more competitive out there for talent and hiring talent. So I'm just going to work real quick just down the chairs here, starting with Erin, and let her tell you a little bit about what she does, and then we'll go forward.
Hi, everyone. Erin McBerry. I'm Vice President of Marketing and Content for Vision Venture Partners. And I'm sure you don't know who that is or what marketing and content means, because it can mean a lot. Vision Venture Partners is a private equity firm in the esports and entertainment space. I actually come from the world of advertising, so working with TBWA, Shia Day, Ogilvy, big creative ad agencies. So I didn't know what that meant, working in a private equity firm. We had investments in a lot of different spaces within the esports and gaming community. My job in particular right now is we're getting ready to launch a digital entertainment network, and with that is who and what is this network, what is the brand, what's the identity of who we are, to, from a content perspective, what are we doing from a short form perspective, from storytelling? Who are the characters? What's happening? What channels are we using? How are we using those channels? So as we start to get bigger with this, I'm going to be hiring a lot, so that's good. But that gives you a little bit of an idea of what I do.
I'm Scott Campbell. I'm the Senior Manager of Talent Acquisition at Blizzard Entertainment. So I oversee recruiting for Activision Blizzard Esports, so that includes Overwatch League, Call of Duty World League, competitive programs around World of Warcraft, StarCraft, and Hearthstone, as well as our Blizzard broadcast team and the Major League Gaming platform.
How long have you been in your role?
So I've been at Blizzard for 7 years. So 7 years in gaming. Prior to that, I was more of a general entertainment background. I've been at Disney for about 8 years, Lucasfilm, a couple other companies like that.
Okay, great.
Hey, everybody. Pete Powell. I'm the Director of Human Resources for Nerd Street Gamers. Nerd Street is essentially the amateur infrastructure company for what we're now trying to create in this crazy world of esports. We are both a live events company, production company, and really a retail company, kind of all wrapped into one. But I've been there since January of this year, so relatively new to the esports world, and previously worked for Comcast Spectacor, which is the sports and entertainment company in Philadelphia that owns the Philadelphia Flyers and the Wells Fargo Center.
I'm Greg Siasco. I'm the CEO of Abacus 3. We are, I would say, the best way to put it is an esports experience company. So working with the rights holders and brands to create the experiences that they want. My background is primarily in sports sponsorships, traditional sports sponsorships. I was at AT&T, worked with Dan at some of the big brands that he was mentioning. So taking some of the background of how AT&T approached who they wanted to talk to, utilizing sports, traditional sports, and applying that to not only help guide other brands into the space, but also help those who have the rights to create the experiences that will attract brands.
Great. You know, we've covered a lot, and obviously everybody's here, and esports is, and, you know, its topic. It's hot out there. I mean, why did, you know, all of you essentially came from outside of esports? So, I mean, what gravitated you towards looking at a career within this space as opposed to going the path that you already were on? And I'll just open that up to whoever wants.
Yeah, for me, I think that we were tracking esports on the AT&T side for a number of years, watching it, waiting for it to get to a point where it was time for us to invest. And I think that, you know, it was something that I was seeing the trends of the viewership and realizing it was a generational shift in the way people were choosing to entertain themselves and to socialize, and found it that I personally had a kind of a great desire to be in there to make an impact, because this is probably one of the few times in the few industries right now in this space that is we can make impacts, right? So this is something that we're writing the script as we go. And so that's one of the things that I'm most attracted to, because this is an area of great change, and people can actually make a meaningful impact right now, more so than any other industry.
Great. It's interesting you talk about AT&T. I accidentally found esports, and I say that because I was leading the Verizon Sports and Entertainment team at their creative agency, and I had a bunch of digital producers bring this thing to me called Twitch. And I just remember looking at the numbers and being completely astounded. And at the time, you know, you could only watch an NFL game on your mobile device if you had Verizon.
And so for me, I was looking at how do we do something like that from a Verizon perspective and owning the category from a content perspective. We brought it to Verizon, and Verizon at the time was like very much the NFL was king for them. And so they passed, and now T-Mobile is obviously in the space. And I just kept, you know, finding myself talking to other people as we had Adidas or Nissan or McDonald's, and how do we bring these type of opportunities to the brands? And that's how I fell into it, like, you know, totally accidentally.
Yeah. And for me, it was timing and a bit of luck. I was at Blizzard. I was very attracted to Blizzard, that epic entertainment, those immersive experiences, and I loved the fandom. I loved the quality, and I loved the passion. And I happened to be on vacation in Korea. And a friend invited me to a StarCraft match, a local championship for StarCraft in Korea, and it was mind-blowing, just mind-blowing. I was esports aware, I wasn't a skeptic, but I wasn't in the scene, and it felt like attending a Beatles concert with lasers and hundreds of screens. It was amazing, and it was just an aha moment, and I was lucky enough to be at Blizzard and be able to make myself available to those teams, and we started doing a lot of scaling, and
For me, having worked for Comcast Spectacor in Philly, being a big sports and entertainment conglomerate, and having seen lots of mergers and acquisitions, over the course of my career, one of the later ones was when Comcast decided to buy a Overwatch League team called the Philadelphia Fusion. So I was able to kind of get my feet wet into the esports world when the Fusion came into the fold for us and really started to heavily recruit and build out really a team of professionals that none of my colleagues, including myself, had any experience in before. And then in particular, I was attending a esports conference at Temple University in Philadelphia. And myself and a colleague were representing Comcast Spectacor and the Fusion. And one of the other speakers there was this really smart, dynamic, really good guy named John Fazio. So we had the opportunity to meet at this conference, and I got to know a little bit about Nerdstreet and his company and what he's doing there and some of the great things that were taking place. So, that was kind of my entree into Nerdstreet. And then here I am, a year and a half later, my former company, Comcast Spectacor, is one of the biggest investors in our new company, Nerdstreet Gamers. So that was kind of how that came to be.
Scott, you mentioned you went to the event. So, I mean, for some of those out there that maybe are looking to break in or how they went about it, like, what did you do next? I mean, like, did you have a connection or a network? How did you follow up and actually make that transition over to Blizzard?
Yeah. Well, for me, it was contact based. Yeah. I decided to move on from Disney. And kind of pinged my network, and a friend of a friend of a friend just said, hey, well, Blizzard's looking, and what they need is similar to what you were doing. And honestly, it was one of those, again, it was timing. So many things were timing. And had a few conversations with Blizzard, and just really, really liked the company culture, felt it was a company where I could be successful, felt like it was also a place where I could be very proud to represent, and I could feel very good about bringing people to that company.
Okay, great. So I meant to preface the conversation by saying, if any of you have questions, don't wait till the end. Like, feel free, if you hear a comment and you want to jump in, feel free to jump in. Yeah.
So the headlines about some college students and their seeking experience, what experience would you like to see them come out with, and what advice might you have for what they could be doing while they're in school, so the position to connect with you on those jobs, you're like, perfect.
Yeah, so some of my best hires are former student presidents of the esports clubs, of the teams. In fact, one of the guys I'm really proud that we got is he was the president of Duke Esports, and so he brought them up to convince the administration that this is something you need to do, and this is this is started it and now sustained. So I think that for college students who want to get into esports as a career, they have the opportunity right now to do that. Right, the fact of organizing a group of students around a topic, convincing administration, running events, organizing and continuing that type of activities is exactly what we would be looking for at our companies. Somebody who's a self-starter, who understands it, is organized enough to make things happen.
Yeah, Yeah, I mean, we hire a fair amount of new graduates across Activision Blizzard, and for a lot of them, really, it's a little bit more complex than just wanting to work in esports. It's what do they want to do in esports? Because we're at a point where there's such a variety of roles that that level of focus is really what's going to help that student get ahead or get that initial role. So it can be marketing, it can be analytics, it can be strategy, it can be league operations. It matters a bit kind of what they want to do. Esports is not monolithic. And that, again, that focus and that discipline passion is going to help a lot.
And I'll just add to the fact that I think just in a very short amount of time, a lot of those types of roles have already evolved before our eyes. You know, I'll give you the perfect example. 2 years ago, I remember when we bought the Fusion and we were trying to staff up certain critical roles right off the bat. And myself having a recruiting background, but having never recruited in esports before, it was a little bit mind blowing to me. And I remember my colleague Joe, who was staffing up for the Fusion at the time, said, "Pete, we need to form a job description for this job. We want to call it meme specialist." And I just looked at him and I'm like, "Joe, we're meme specialist." Right. And it was like, I had no idea. I consider myself pretty good at, you know, building a job description out. But when it came to that, I said, "Joe, like, 2 to 3 years of being a sarcastic jackass, like, what do you want me to put here?" So just seeing where we were at that time to kind of the evolution of that type of role to what it is today, and how I think that, you know, I think you guys might have input here too, being able to present those jobs to align in a way that they are more, I guess, you know, something that you would see on an Indeed, can go a long way toward, you know, legitimizing a lot of those types of roles for college students in particular.
I actually want to add a little different take to this. So I go back to Michigan. I went to Michigan. I'm on the board there, and I talk to students all the time. And in the sports management program, that's what my degree is in. And a lot of them are like, I just want to be in sports. And what I try to teach them is that your first job isn't going to be your career. Your second job is not going to be your career. Right? It's go in there and get the skills that you need that are transferable.
Sure.
Understanding, you know, knowing what business is, taking accounting classes, understanding what, you know, how events are run, all of those things, because there's so much that you can do, that not to get tunnel vision the way that some people in the sports world are. Like, students, as I mentioned, they come in, like, I want to work for a team, I want to work for a league, or I want to be an athletic director. And I hate to see students do the same thing with esports, because so many of the skills that you're going to learn in those first, you know, two jobs, you can take it anywhere from a media perspective.
And the only things I was going to just chime in real quick, it was a great question, is, you know, to Aaron's point, I talk to a lot of students as well that want to work in sports and entertainment and in esports, and they just, I want to work in sports. Okay, they don't have a clear path. So you tell let your students know, identify those roles that most interest them, and then go out and research them and identify and network and talk to people, because it is, to Scott's point about timing and network, that's true in every industry. I mean, it's timing and network, but this is also an industry that I've seen more than any other, even the traditional sports, that you can create your kind of your own opportunities now. I mean, like, this is, because the paths haven't been so set in place as opposed to traditional industries, whether it's finance or banking or insurance or sports, even like traditional sports. But you have, you know, to Pete's point about a meme specialist, I mean, no one has that in pretty much probably any, you know, most industries out there. So if you've got a way, and the most important thing is just to relate to them, you got to add value. No matter what you want to do at the end of the day, how are you adding value to my organization? And if you can add value in a very unique and creative way, organizations are going to probably listen to you, because at the end of the day, they got to drive revenue. So, yeah. He gave you a nice plug.
Very generous. There's a lot of parallels, obviously, with sports, and that's, you know, the thread here. When it comes to the people who want to be in esports, they copy, they say, I want to be there, they're the ones applying. The people who don't know that their skills are transferable to esports and the sports industry, what is it that you guys look for to highlight and find those specific people?
So, So for Overwatch League and for Call of Duty World League, we've obviously hired a number of people from traditional sports, and that was a certain, there was certain expertise we decided we wanted to help build these initiatives. A lot of it was looking for cultural match and looking for someone who could operate in the at the intersection of the environments we needed to navigate. We're a startup unit inside a large company. We sit at the intersection of the developers, the fans, and the esport. We need to move quickly, but have an eye on the long haul. All of these things wrap up to a particular set of traits that someone needs in order to operate in our universe.
Can you identify what those are?
Move quickly, but don't burn out. You need to operate with a lot of care because we're operating global programs that need to respect local communities. You need to be able to build a consensus. We are a heavily matrix organization. There's lots of checking and cross-checking. You need to be able to be a subject matter expert, but navigate with grace and subtlety. Go ahead.
Just go back to your question. I think when I'm looking at talent, especially because I come from advertising and sports, and it's interesting because I struggle trying to get into the traditional sports world, and Dan, you know this, because I didn't come from the traditional sports world, even though I worked on massive advertising campaigns for brands with massive sponsorships, of, you know, NBA, NASCAR. I didn't come from that world, and so I was discriminated against. And coming into this world, for me, it was showcasing the skills that I have that are super transferable, and everything's really relative. So when I'm looking at talent, you know, do you know digital marketing? Can you talk what digital marketing is? You know what SEO is and CRM, and can you build a website? Like all of those things, and I don't care what industry you've come from. I tend to look at people who come from more pop culture passion points because I think there's something about, we work a lot. So you gotta kind of like love what you do. So those are kind of some of the things I look for.
Are there any questions? I thought so. Was there one over there? Yeah. That kind of leads into, dovetails into the next question that I was going to ask is, you know, it's competitive out there. I mean, there aren't an infinite amount of places within esports yet. So what are your organizations doing to attract the best talent? Like, I mean, what are you implementing to attract the best talent out there to come work for your company, if anything?
Yeah, well, I think we were talking about culture earlier, too. That's one thing, is that having come from the corporate America side now in what's more of a startup environment, we think daily about culture and how what we're doing is a competitive advantage compared to other people in the space. So it is a daily topic for us, is to make it a place that everyone's voice is heard, and it's very utopian as I'm trying to make it. Is it that, you know, exactly? No, but I think that the fact that they can come to Apicus 3, learn from a huge swath of different opportunities rather than just press this button every hour on the hour and that's your job, right? So there's a huge amount of opportunities, and I think the fact that, you know, we listen to the intern as much as we listen to my president, right? So I think it's something that's unique in this space because it's not built up so much in a lot of cases that you have to just do what you're told on the hill.
And, you know, Greg just he stole the key word for me, and that is culture. That's absolutely true. I feel very, very confident that, you know, when we look at what we're trying to make this industry right now, you know, as great as it is from a talent standpoint, to me, it lacks two main things. And those are the two main things that I experienced a lot, you know, that professional sports has struggled with for many, many years. And that is, you know, sometimes the lack of professionalism and the lack of diversity. So to me, you know, esports tends to struggle with that, you know, in some regards right now, and it's no different from a lot of things that happen in sports and the entertainment industries as a whole for many, many years. So it's about building the culture and about differentiating yourself, what that culture is, what defines, you know, you talk about your brands. Well, you also have an employment brand. What does it mean to work at Nerd Street and be a nerd, quote unquote? You know, what does that mean from a differentiation standpoint from other esports companies to work for Nerd Street?
So the back end of the question is, if you're a college student what, and it's related to your culture, what do you provide for them in terms of helping them learn the skills that they need, given that they're coming in pretty raw, it's their first, could be their first job or second job? And how will they know what you provide in terms of management, training, and all of this kind of development? And does that play a role in your culture?
As far as the opportunity to learn and to grow, I think that I laugh because I look at the guy who we just hired from Duke, and I look at the opportunities he's working on and the amount of autonomy that we give him, but also support to learn more on the job than I did. I mean, my first job was I was literally working on an Excel spreadsheet for hours and days, and then I could check my email, right? So that was like my first job. Whereas for him, we're throwing everything at him that he could possibly take. And so what we're able to see is based on different, areas of his comfort level where he doesn't need support and where he needs support. So that's kind of the way we're approaching it. So there's usually four levels where someone needs to be helped, hold their hand all the way to say to them they got it and let them walk away.
Yeah, it's absolutely, for us, it's lead by example. With the college kids coming into this environment, it's a startup environment, so lead by example, walk the walk, so to speak. And quite honestly, I think the challenge is for more experienced professional folks coming to join, an organization like ours that is that, startup, hall ass type of environment. It is the, check your ego at the door type of situation. Whereas with a college kid fresh out of school, they don't know any different yet. So we're kind of responsible for shaping that.
Yeah, but layering on top of that, I think you were saying add value. And that's essentially it. I don't care if you've been in the industry for 30 years or any traditional sports industry. Certainly you can come in at a certain level because of what you've done in the past, but from this point forward, once you walk in the door, it's about what value you brought. So the person who's been maybe in his career for 2 years or so, if he's adding more value than someone who's been there for 30 years, obviously we're going to recognize them. Who's bringing more value now?
That's great. We talked a little bit about the traits that would make somebody successful in the roles, or especially within esports and maybe your companies. But I'm going to ask you this, and I think I know the answer. But does being a gamer make you a good candidate for your roles?
No, I'm not a gamer.
I'm just yeah.
You what?
Yeah, I was just asking because in sports, you tend to find the person who sent the obligatory letter of I'm a season ticket holder, I'm the biggest fan, I'm everything else, and it instantly goes into the garbage pile. So if any of you do that, don't do that.
I'm not a gamer, but I will say I need gamers around me.
Yeah, I'd say for traditional sports, I just always tell people on my team, act like you've been there before, even if you haven't. You could be the biggest fan in the world, but if you're out there like a fanboy, you've just lost all professional credibility. So I don't think that it hurts. It doesn't hurt not to be a gamer, but you need to have respect for the space. You need to understand why the fans that you're working with have a motivation to do what they're doing, and the same thing with professionals, and the same thing with brands coming in. You need to have a respect for it.
For us, there's probably a handful of roles where it would be unlikely for you to be in that role and not be a gamer, but that's the minority of roles. Mm-hmm. And those are roles around the competition operations, tournament design. Those are the kinds of roles where you're probably immersed in the scene enough to understand how those things function. But generally speaking, right, it's being sympathetic to the scene, it's understanding the fandom. That you've got to have an attraction to the scene, to the movement that makes sense. But you don't need to be a gamer.
And I'll only say that it can be helpful, but it's not necessary. Because of the fact that, I take pride in the fact that we're trying to essentially, make everyone a gamer, or build the bridge between maybe the non-gamer and the avid gamer. We all know, even from the avid gamer standpoint, there's lingo, there's the way they talk, it's a lot of different things, but again, it's no different than, working in a big corporate environment, because big corporate people speak in a certain way too. You've ever worked in that kind of environment, right? So you have to remember that. And, I will only say in addition that, it's about building that bridge to being able to speak to, priding ourselves on, you can speak to the 14-year-old that plays Fortnite, you can speak to the 55-year-old sitting in the boardroom. And what I've found, quite honestly, is ironically that the 14-year-old Fortnite is probably the son or daughter of the 55-year-old sitting in the boardroom. So you're really talking to, you know, you're learning it from all angles, being able to speak that language.
What, as it relates to candidates and the candidates that are applying for your jobs, social media is, in the social strategy is such a heavy presence within this space. Do you guys check that? I mean, you know, I mean, like, do you check it, Scott? I mean, like, I think about it, you know, with the background of checking out a Twitter or their Instagram or, you know, their Twitch account, you know, I mean, like, it, check their history, because it can play an important part of making the transition over.
Yeah, I mean, that's something we're seeing, not, and that's not unique to our esports hiring. I mean, that's just something we see across the company, that everyone's very, very active, everyone's lives are very, very public, and, you know, a lot of folks early in career don't necessarily understand separating their personal and professional personas. And we don't do a formalized check right now. Companies, more and more companies are starting to do formal social media checks before hiring people. It's not something we do right now. I can't say if we would do it in the future or not, but it's a trend. And if something was brought to our attention that was awkward, that would probably influence our hiring decision.
How important? Yeah, go ahead.
Oh, sorry. So what kind of educational background? Would you consider someone with an associate's degree? Do you look just for a bachelor's degree? Do you look at all of it? Do you look at the...
Only doctors in our office.
No, I'll jump, you know what I mean? Like, I think at the end of the day, organizations will hire, you know what I mean? You do have certain organizations that are very college snobs, you know what I mean, that will only hire, I believe, just because that's true of what they believe. They'll only hire masters or, you know, master's degrees just because that's what they believe. But I haven't seen as much here because it's so new and it's so, you know, I mean, there's kind of a rush to, I think, the traditional mentality of a college student graduating with a business degree or marketing degree or, you know, a political science degree. They may not transition quite as quick or fast with it, in my opinion. But.
Yeah, I think that my own personal viewpoint on college education has shifted as I've got more years under my belt. I think that you know, obviously given the price of college right now and how indebted people become, they may not be the best financial decision to go to college. And so I think that's something that this generation who's coming and looking at that is facing, that I didn't face it. I don't need a college degree. If I can see that this person has, you know, resourcefulness, thoughtfulness, the things that we've talked about as far as the energy, the flexible thinking, they have all that, but they just don't have a college degree because they were probably smart enough and strong enough to stand up and say, I don't need a college degree. And that's respectable as well.
For our hiring, or for our job descriptions, very few roles have college as a requirement, although most of our employees are college graduates.
The college preferred, or bachelor's preferred.
Doctors preferred.
Doctors preferred, and have it as three, so.
Same with us. I mean, yeah, most of our jobs require degrees, but I'm of the belief that you don't necessarily need a college degree to do great things. And that is across the board, but especially in this industry, there's a lot of successful people out there that have done amazing things and, you know, built amazing things that don't have degrees. So that's how I feel.
What, Scott, you mentioned it a little bit, but I mean, how important is your network, in building your network? Not only in a career search, but I mean, for yourself personally. I mean, as they're looking to get into the industry or, you know, looking to hire people, how important is networking?
It's very, very important. At a certain point, right, your network gets you access, but your experience gets you the job. So your network is not going to get you a job you're not qualified for. But the other thing I think it's important to remember with your network, and this touches a bit on the social media issue we were talking about, is that past a point, it's a pretty small industry. And so your reputation and the way you carry yourself and the way you work and the way you treat others, that will start to, you know, you'll develop a reputation. So being a good egg is incumbent upon you, because that's gonna follow you at a certain point.
And I will just say that, you know, the old credo holds, and that, you know, the best job, usually the best job you land is the one you never even applied for. You know, it's the one that you found through somebody in your network, a friend, somebody who's looking out for you, a mentor, someone along those lines. And, you know, in a lot of ways, Scott's absolutely right. It's a small, tight-knit industry. It's amazing how much just being here, you know, walking around John and Danny, how everybody seems to know everybody. And I think that, you know, as the industry grows, obviously it's more people, but it's the elements of that are going to remain the same.
Jumping back to, oh, go ahead.
I wanted to ask a question about diversity.
Yeah, that's what I was next topic, so it was perfect.
You know, too often diversity becomes about statistics, right? It's about making sure there's this type of person here and this number. And for me, what I saw P very often is that it's about depth of diversity and diversity of thought. Where they come, where the backgrounds, how are they getting contributed to different perspectives to your company? And so I'd love to hear each of your kind of opinion on how you view diversity and the depth of diversity.
I guess since I'm the only female on the panel.
I didn't realize that.
It's something I'm very mindful of, and I sit in a room with, you know, most of my senior executive teams are men and primarily white. And I'm the one who's constantly in the room being like, hey guys, we need diversity of thought. Understand that our partner says that that's not a good idea. I'd much rather go and maybe do our own internal focus group with some people who are younger, so it's not the opinion of older white males. And it's not to be discriminatory toward them, but it's constantly keeping the conversation going. And recognizing and being aware that when you walk into a room with 17 people and you're the only female and my head of digital is the only African American, that we talk about it. And because we know when we start to build this team out, I want diversity of thought. That's the most important thing that I want, is people who come from different industries, who come from different places, because it's such an amazing thing when you get talent like that in a room together, how much better the ideas are. And I know we say that a lot, and I think for me, I've also spoken on a lot of panels lately about women in sports, women in media. And the biggest thing that, like, I love it because we've got to keep the conversation going, but what's the action? And, you know, earlier today, there was a gentleman that said he wouldn't speak on a panel. He wanted to know who was on the panel because he wasn't going to speak on the panel unless there was diversity on the panel. And that's action. That's minor, but that's action. And so those are the things I think that we have to constantly do is when we're having these conversations, is what are those minute actions that we can continue to take?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know how many of you may have been in the discussion yesterday with Ann Hand from Super League Gaming, who said that, you know, I thought it was one of the best points I heard, that, you know, diversity is not an esports only problem, it's a global world problem, yeah. Business and problem. So, but no, I mean, it is very important, and I think we're all, you know, I like to spin it by saying we have an opportunity in this industry to kind of write the book. You know what I mean? Because it is so new and it is so, you know, outside the box of traditional, that we can actually kind of paint the picture moving forward for a lot of other industries and be that standard. So I mean, there's a great opportunity within here.
Yeah, no, I think that's a great way to frame it, is that there are some problems, but there is absolutely an opportunity. And I think at this inflection point in the development of esports, I think one of the nice things is that because so many different industries are now feeding into esports, that gives us, from a hiring perspective, a chance to not necessarily replicate limits that come from certain industries. Certain industries, you know, if you're hiring from one source, and that source, that school, that industry, that whatever, has certain demographic challenges, and you only hire from that, you're going to replicate that in your business. But now esports has an opportunity to hire from all these global industries, and that gives us a chance to break out.
I concur with everything that's been said up here. The only thing that I will add as far as diversity of thought is that, you know, one of the things that I think we pride ourselves on at Nerd Street is giving opportunities to, you know, get into competitive gaming to those that might not economically be able to afford to get into esports, or, you know, to game on high-end equipment, $3,000-$4,000 PCs. So, you know, one of the things that we're really trying to do right off the bat is, you know, get into those communities, tell them about who we are, what our mission is, and be able to obviously connect not just with, you know, gathering new customers, so to speak, but letting people know about our mission. Because in that light, if people are able to see our mission, then we're going to be able to meet new people as well that could potentially be future Nerd Street employees.
Sure.
So it's kind of all connected in that way. So
Yeah, I don't have any quotas or anything I need to meet. I think it's a matter of, for us, we want to hire the best people, right? We want to win. And if we're all looking at it from the same point of view, just from mental diversity, then you've got a blind spot. People have blind spots, companies have blind spots. And if you don't have diversity in thought and looking at a situation, then you're gonna miss something.
One other thing I'd like to add on is we're aware of the challenges of diversity in recruiting, but we're also concerned about the challenges of diversity and retention. It's one thing to go out and hire them, but folks need to be comfortable once they arrive. And so not just our esports programs, but across the company, we're really trying to take concrete steps to create a welcome and diverse environment that people from different backgrounds, from different cultures can be successful in.
That's going to be a standard program that you would implement from the beginning. It's great. I've been given, we've got like five more minutes, but I was going to ask the panel here, what are the most critical areas of our industry that you feel are understaffed or that are in most demand? Like moving forward, what are the positions that you guys have the hardest time or you see the most demand out there for?
Go ahead. Well, I mean, for me, I think that the majority of the industry here is younger, and so I was spending a lot of my time complimenting the younger demos as they come up because of the energy they have and those types of things. But there is a level of expectation that I do want someone with a little more experience, a little more gray hair, to have been through it before, because owners are wanting return on their investments now, and you don't get that unless you have maybe. You've got the experience to see what you're missing. So I think that, from my standpoint, is trying to bring in people who, to attract people from other levels that are very high to come over, at a higher, stage of life where they've got kids that are older and whatever else. And so that's the biggest issue for me, is to bring some of those senior people in.
For us, I'd say it's events people, because of the fact that we do host so many events and, it's kind of at the core of what we do. Being able to not only find and recruit, but pretty much seal the deal with a lot of events folks. I mean, what we try to do is give them, there's the job description that you read online when you apply to a job, and then there's the real job, right? And that's what I know I try to do, all my colleagues try to create this, hey, this is the job, you're gonna be working, 70 hours a week for a while during our busy seasons. And quite honestly, this isn't for everybody. So, that creates obviously a problem, like I said, in so-called sealing the deal, but the flip side to that, the side that we really try to promote is, hey, help us come build something special. We're at the point in our evolution right now where, the core of our, we just hit 30 employees, the core people that are a part of this right now are going to grow this to a level that maybe none of us even realize just yet. So, it's a unique opportunity for somebody that really, really wants to work hard. And again, since events, nights, weekends, everything like that is such a commitment, that kind of becomes the deal breaker, so to speak, for a lot of people.
For Activision Blizzard Esports, in this moment, the greatest volume of what we're bringing on is probably folks around content, so broadcast media content. In the industry, what I'm probably observing is strategy and analytics. People are getting more and more savvy. To Greg's point, investors want return, they're trying to manage their risk, and so folks are looking a lot more at strategy and analytics. Teams are analyzing their behavior, their comps. Businesses are analyzing. That's just one of the more recent trends, and I think that's only going to accelerate.
Greg stole my answer. Yeah. Totally agree in the sense that there's a lot of talented, more junior people, but really needing some of that higher level junior to senior talent that can kind of come in and lead and take on teams and projects. That's probably number one for me. I think the other thing that we're doing in building is gaming as entertainment, and how that's really kind of becoming an it thing, and everybody's chasing it, and we're chasing it as well, is people who know how to think about programming, OTT, apps, So that technological side, our digital side, that's going to be something that's going to be really interesting on my side.
Are we, do we have time for like a question if there's one out there?
Yeah, just one more question. Yeah.
Anybody have any questions specific? Or, go ahead.
I might look for you, Peter, Mr. Bosley over there. Since you guys are a little more like location-based and community-centric, how hard, like looking for event people, what's your method of going out and finding event people? Do you look at the gaming communities around, or do you like just post ads to fights?
Mr. Fazio? I'll just let you know that, you know, right now, you know, we have three primary locations and pretty much span across the country in Philadelphia, Denver, and Huntington Beach, basically LA. So, yeah, for right now, our recruiting efforts are very much geo-based in those three areas. However, the main strategic part of recruiting for me right now is finding people that are willing to relocate. Because if you're finding people that are, you know, upwardly mobile, relocatable, however you want to say it, and a lot of times those are going to be your recent college graduates, right? Then we have an opportunity for you, even if you don't necessarily live in one of those locations. Oh, and by the way, the plan is for us to be in many, many more locations across the country in the next couple of years. And if we can get you back closer to home, we will certainly do that. So, you know, that's kind of the way that we're approaching it right now. We're doing everything with an eye toward the future and eye toward scaling.
Well, I'd like to thank the panel up here. A round of applause for the discussion today. Did you have anything you needed to come up and say? Is there a break next to the
thing? Right now, another panel here at 4:14.
All right. Thank you very much.
All right, go break it.